Welcome to the Man Cave Podcast with Dan Casper.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by our good friends from Hy-Vee and Toys and Ford. I'm Dan Casper. As always, big thanks for tuning into the podcast. Quick reminder before we get going here, because we're going to talk some baseball and we're going to talk some Packers football coming up here. We've got swag. Shout out to our swag providers, Resonance Branding Company. Get a link for some of this swag available for purchase by checking out the podcast description. All right, it's in the link's over there. Also, if you've got a little bit, if you want to click that follow and subscribe button, that way you never miss an episode, that would be awesome. All right, so a little housekeeping work right there. But as I said, we're going to talk some baseball in the second half here, with opening day just right around the corner. But I want to lead things off with some Packers news, because the Packers signed a new kicker. Packers bringing in Greg Joseph, former Vikings kicker, spent some time with Cleveland, Tennessee, but the last couple of years was with Minnesota. Now, I'm sure on the surface, a lot of people figured, okay, he's the new kicker. I would maybe pump the brakes a little bit here. I think right now it is a straight-up competition. It is best man wins in training camp, in preseason. Because when you look at, you know, some of the numbers here, there's a lot of similarities between Joseph and Anders Carlson. Both have big legs. Big legs in terms of distance on the kicks, okay? I mean, Anders, I think, he's a little bit of a taller dude over there. Greg's 6 foot. Anders is like 6'5", I believe. Anyways, but you look at, and I know it's just 1 year of Anders compared to Greg Joseph and such, but there's similarities between these guys. Anders last year, okay, just for a reminder, extra point percentage. Anders was 87.2%. Last year, Greg Joseph, extra point percentage was 94.7. Okay, he was 36 of 38. Anders was 34 of 39. Field goal percentage, Greg Joseph last year was 80. Anders, 81.8. Okay. Anders made 27 of 33 field goal attempts, while Greg Joseph made 24 of 30. Greg Joseph's last year, his longest was 54, Anders 53. If we're looking at, if you want to break it down by distances, Greg Joseph last year was a perfect 7 of 7 from 20 to 29. And he was a perfect 9 of 9 from 30 to 39. So perfect essentially from 0, because he made one under 19 yards. He was perfect from 0 to 39 yards. Anders was also perfect from 0 to 39 yards. He was 6 of 6 from 20 to 29. 14 of 14 from 30 to 39. Now gets into the 40 to 49 yard range, okay? Joseph last year was 3 of 6 from 40 to 49. Now, years prior, he was 7 of 8 and then 7 of 9. But last year was just 3 of 6 from 40 to 49. Anders from 40 to 49 was 50%, 4 of 8. Similar, right? 50%. And then when you go at 50 yards or higher, Greg Joseph was 4 of 7. Anders Carlson, 3 of 5. So, I mean, it's not like Greg Joseph is coming in here and has eye-poppingly awesome numbers compared to Anders Carlson when we look at Greg Joseph's numbers from last year. So the other part of this is if we look at percentage of time, I think now we got to factor in kickoffs because of the new kickoff rule. Last year, and these numbers might be a little bit, I mean, because maybe take it a little bit with a grain of salt because of the new rules here, but gives us a little bit of an idea here. But Greg Joseph last year, percentage of the time that the kickoff was a touchback, 77.2%. Anders was 43%. Now, the caveat to all that could be, or the other note to all this could be, what was the Packers' plans for kickoff? Were they, you know, trying to keep it within the in that landing zone now, that they didn't want to have all the touchbacks, so they wanted to force some returns, so that's why his touchback percentage is a little bit lower? Was that a Rich Bisaccia thing? Was that a Packers thing where they wanted to force more returns? They wanted to force that, so that's why the percentage is down, and maybe, you know, Minnesota-wise, they tried to have more touchbacks. We don't know that answer necessarily, because it sure seems like with Anders' leg, if he wanted to kick it out of the back of the end zone, more times than not, he could. So you got those over there. That might be a little skewed. But I just think now with the kickoff rule, if you got a team that wants to really try to make sure that ball sticks in that landing zone and force some returns, you're going to need a kicker now that's going to be a little bit more accurate. Kind of have to have a little golf game going at it. Maybe bust out that wedge and stick it right into that landing zone. Get a little stand wedge or a lob wedge or a gap wedge out there and pluck that thing in there. So it's, what is Rich Bisaccia's thoughts on the new kickoff rule? Like, what's going to be their game plan? Are they going to, you know, try to consistently put that thing in the landing zone and force some returns? Or are they going to be like, screw it, we're just going to kick it out of the back of the end zone and, you know, start it up at 35, 30, whatever it's at now. 30, I think. Because I do think what's going to happen if we do see an increase in returns and, like, or, you know, touchdown returns, I do think you're going to see teams then maybe kind of, you know, if they go up, let's say Keyshawn Nixon goes out there and just lights it up in the return game. Like, he's like Devin Hester, Dante Hall, Brian Mitchell from back in the day, whoever. Let's say he's got a bunch of returns. Guarantee you teams now then are probably just going to, like, screw it, we're going to just kick it in the back of the end zone and you guys get to start at 30. We ain't going to mess with a potential return for a touchdown. That's if some of these players and some of these teams can take advantage of that and are really good at making those returns. You're going to see some adjustments here there. Now, will the NFL and the competition committee kind of alter those again like they did this year? I don't know. Probably not. But I think you're going to see a lot of teams now try to find that speedster to put out there in the return game and try to take advantage of that. So I know there were some Packers fans yesterday, at least on the socials, pretty excited. Like, hey, all right, we got a kicker. That's going to, you know, change things a little bit out there. No. I'd hold your breath a little bit. I think it's going to be a straight-up competition. And I go back to last year, spring training. See, I keep saying spring training. Preseason and training camp. I was one of those who wanted a veteran kicker in camp to give Anders some competition and maybe just even kind of provide some veteran leadership. You know, they had Daniel Whalen, a rookie punter, but they also had Pat O'Donnell in. And they went with a rookie punter. And I don't know how much Pat O'Donnell helped Daniel Whalen, but just to have a little bit of a competition there, but also have a veteran presence there. And I thought that could have been beneficial for an Anders. You know, I don't think they would have brought in Mason and then cut Mason for a rookie because Mason was just such a longtime Packer. I think that was just probably like, you know, we're not going to go that way. But I thought they could have brought in another veteran to provide a little competition, because I don't think competition hurts, and to maybe provide a little bit of that veteran mentorship, if you will. I feel like they went with the route or with the mindset, hey, we got a rookie kicker in. We don't want to maybe put a little more pressure on him by having a veteran in and maybe him thinking too much and getting into his head. And the other part is, too, I really felt, and it's hindsight 2020 now, but I really, when you look back at it, and you look back at some of the comments from Goody throughout the year, how, you know, we're going to stick with Anders and that. I think they were willing to live with the ups and downs. And we talked about this last year. They were willing to live with the ups and downs of a rookie kicker. But I also think they were willing to do that because I don't think they would ever admit it. But I don't think they thought that they were going to be in a position maybe to go to the NFC Championship game. I you know, a few plays here and there. They exceeded those expectations. So I personally feel like, again, they would never admit that, but I personally feel like they had maybe a little bit of a mindset, hey, we're willing to go through the ups and downs of a rookie kicker because, yeah, we probably know we're not going to be champs this year or Super Bowl champs this year. So we're willing to go through the ups and downs, and hopefully, ideally, it'll be, you know, the growing pains, and this will benefit him for his future. But I think the way Jordan Love played, the way those rookie receivers, tight ends, a lot of other players played, and a few plays away from potentially going to the NFC Championship game against a team that they were very familiar with, we talked about it. That changed expectations. We're back to, you know, all right, competing for Super Bowls again. You don't have a grace period anymore. So, all right, where's the weaknesses on this team? Well, one of the big weaknesses last year was the inconsistency on the kicking game. So let's bring in a veteran and kind of maybe cover our butts in that department in case we get into camp and we have some preseason games and it's clearly evident that Anders maybe just isn't the dude. We're going to have a backup plan here. I do wonder if Green Bay had a poo-poo year last year, let's say, where they just won a few games, they weren't in the playoffs, weren't in contention, if they still bring in a veteran kicker. I still kind of wonder that. And a veteran kicker that's had, you know, a few years under his belt in the league, not just like a guy that, you know, has been on some practice squads for the last couple of years, but a guy who's kicked in games, a lot of games. I do wonder if they would have still done that. Because I'm kind of up in the air on that. So, that's definitely, we already know that's going to be a training camp battle to watch. Before the draft, before, you know, some other potential moves being made, we know that's probably going to be one of the top, if not the top, position battle to watch starting in July, end of July. Can the rookie handle a little competition from a veteran knowing that his job might be on the line? Pressure is a privilege, as Jordan Love likes to say, right? Well, let's see if Anders believes the same thing. As a kicker, I would think you can handle some pressure. I would think you'd be able to handle that or embrace it a little bit. But that's definitely going to be one of the top battles to watch in preseason and training camp this year. Perks. I love Perks. You love Perks. We all love Perks. And one of the best perks you could find in the Chippewa Valley is Hy-Vee Perks. Hy-Vee Perks is a free and easy program for Hy-Vee shoppers. Access exclusive Perks prices, earn discounts on gas when you purchase designated products at Hy-Vee, and save more with exclusive deals, offers, and rewards. The best part? It's free to join. Not a part of Hy-Vee Perks yet? No worries. Just stop by Hy-Vee in Eau Claire to sign up. Start taking advantage of the best shopping deals in the Chippewa Valley right now with Hy-Vee and Hy-Vee Perks. Toyson Ford is your go-to destination for quality vehicles and exceptional service. At Toyson Ford, they have a vast selection of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs to fit your lifestyle and budget. Their dedicated team is there to make your car buying experience a breeze. They offer financing options that suit your needs and a service center that keeps your vehicle running smoothly. Come on down to Toyson Ford and test drive your dream car today. They're located at 1000 Chippewa Crossing Boulevard in Chippewa Falls. Toyson Ford, where your road to excellence begins. Before we get to some Brewers baseball, quick reminder, shout out to Resonance Branding Company, the official swag provider of the Man Cave Podcast and the Dan Casper Show. Check out some of the available swag we have. The link is in the podcast description. Just click on that link and you can purchase right there, a little online store there from Resonance Branding Company. I want to talk some Brewers here as we get ready for opening day. And the question I want to ask, what are some of the things that have you the most intrigued or maybe most excited? Who or what, you know, maybe it's a certain player or such. One of my top ones, I'm intrigued to see Pat Murphy now as the manager for the Milwaukee Brewers. It's, you know, for the guy who coached Craig Counsell in college and then became his bench coach throughout Craig Counsell's tenure in Milwaukee, it sure seems like we're getting a different type of manager. Obviously, a little bit of a different personality, it sure seems like. Now, we'll see when games matter if we'll see a different type of manager when it comes to strategy and philosophy. We'll get to that, you know, once we get into regular season games and that. But I'm curious, intrigued to see how Pat Murphy does as manager. You know, from just a fan standpoint, you like a lot of stuff that he says. You're entertained by a lot of the stuff that he's had to say. He's got some good liners. Gets you excited, I think, about baseball every time I've heard him talk and listen to him answer some questions and such. You just kind of get a little bit more excited. He's a guy, and even when he was a bench coach for the Brewers, he was one of those guys that I think a lot of fans just like gravitated towards, kind of like Ed Cedar when Cedar was there and being the third base coach for the Brewers. Well, now Pat Murphy's the main man. He's going to be under a little bit more criticism. You know, as a bench coach, it's you get the luxury maybe of being like a fan favorite. But now that you're going to be the main man making the calls, making the decisions, you're going to be under the microscope. You're going to be under the spotlight a little bit more. And under a little bit more criticism after every single game. So I'm excited because I think he brings a new enthusiasm. I think the players just kind of trying to read between the lines and such really respect Pat Murphy, love Pat Murphy. And I'm just excited to see how he does now as the new skipper. It's going to be different. It's an unknown. You know, how many years have we had Craig Counsell? We kind of knew the philosophy. We kind of knew the strategy under Craig Counsell. So it'll be interesting to see if his former longtime bench coach will employ a lot of the same stuff, or will he do something different? I hope he puts his own spin on it. I hope he goes out there and does what he believes needs to be done. He manages the way he believes the way things should be managed. Be his own guy. Be his own manager. So I'm excited. That's one of my top ones here, just to see the Pat Murphy era begin. And it's not to say that, you know, the Craig Counsell era was awful or anything like that. It was highly successful. But it's something new. It's an unknown. And just kind of see how it plays out at this point in time. And with the new, there's a lot of new stuff with this team this year. Let's not kid ourselves. And a lot of that is from the pitching side. That starting rotation. Gone is Corbin Burnes. Brandon Woodruff won't be pitching at all this year. This was the team's top two pitchers for the last couple of years. You got a former Cy Young winner in Corbin Burnes no longer on your team. Brandon Woodruff's a former All-Star. Those are big losses when it comes to your starting rotation. So obviously one of the things that I'm intrigued to see, maybe a little nervous about. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm excited about it because I think there's a lot of questions. And I think maybe saying that I'm intrigued by it is probably the most positive that I could say about it. But Freddy Peralta being the new number one, I think there's an unknown surrounding that. We'll see how he can give us indications that he's a true number one. Because I define a true number one as that guy when it's their spot in the rotation. You're feeling pretty darn good week in and week night, week in and week out, every five starts or whatever, that you're going to get a W. Or if you are in a kind of a rut team-wise, that ace comes around, he's your stopper, can kind of change things around. That dominant guy on the mound. And Freddie has shown some dominant performances. He has shown he's had a lot of those good performances, but now can he do it on a consistent basis? And then after Freddie, there's big old question marks surrounding. I mean, how many innings are we going to see from Wade Miley this year? What should we expect from Colin Ray? Joe Ross? You know, Colin Ray came on the scene last year. He's in his 30s. But a guy that we had no idea who the heck this was had to be thrusted into the rotation because of injuries. And now he's probably your number two, number three starter because of the Wade Miley injury in this rotation. So what should we expect from him? What are we going to see from him? Joe Ross hasn't pitched in the majors in a couple years. What the heck should we expect from him, too? And then on the flip side, you got a DL Hall coming in, the guy who was a part of the Corbin Burns trade, who, you know, you hear a bunch of awesome stuff from you know, scouts and baseball people, but he's also young and inexperienced, so you can maybe expect some growing pains this year and maybe some inconsistency, but, you know, everybody says guy's got some ace-quality stuff. So this starting rotation is something that I'll, you know, definitely one of the top things that I'm going to pay attention to in the early parts of the season because it's such a weird mixture. You got Freddie, who's been a Brewers guy, you know, the last few years. Now he's your new number one and maybe the new number one for at least the next couple of years, depending on how things go and such. So you got him. He's been around a little bit, still fairly young. Then you throw in a Wade Miley. You throw in a Colin Ray. And you throw in a Joe Ross. Veterans in their 30s. Don't know really what to expect from those guys at this certain point in time of their careers and just inexperience in that. And then you throw in a DL Hall, who's coming in with a lot of fanfare, but still an unknown. It's kind of a weird mixture, which I think provides that you know, intriguing part of this. I have no idea what to expect from this rotation. At least when it was Corbin and Brandon and Freddie, and then you throw in Wade as your fourth. I mean, at least for those top three, you knew it's like, okay, we got a good top three starting rotation. You know, we're good. I have no idea what this rotation is going to be like this year. I hope it's good, and I hope, you know, Joe Ross can kind of resurrect his career, and I hope a Colin Ray can maybe, hey, take a step this year. We saw him last year, pitched a lot, starting, spot starts, long relief, whatever. Can he take a stop, or did we see, you know, pretty much the max of what Colin Ray can do? And then DL Hall, how quickly is he going to be able to maybe establish himself as a premier starter in this league and for this team? I really have no idea what to expect from this starting rotation. No idea. So that also kind of, you know, maybe gets you a little bit excited because it is an unknown right now. We don't have really anything to complain about other than the fact that, you know, at least maybe on paper, it's like, oh, it's not that impressive, but at least it provides a little bit of an unknown. You know, offensively, it's kind of weird to say, and I know Brandon and I kind of talked about it on Friday, you know, on paper at least, is it fair to say that maybe you have a little bit more confidence in the offense than what you're going to get from pitching this year? And that's something we haven't said in a couple of years. But you're getting into Rhys Hoskins, who missed last year because of an ACL. Is he going to be a guy that comes in and provides that power in the middle of the lineup that this team has struggled to find consistently the last couple of years? Is he going to be a guy that you can just plug in at that cleanup spot, let's say, and keep him there? And he's going to be a consistent threat. Is he going to get you 30-plus home runs? This is something that the team's been missing offensively for a while now. Can he be that guy? And maybe he's only a one-year two. I don't know. That contract's set up, it could be a one-year. It could be a couple more years after that. I think a lot's just going to depend on how the team performs this year. And then, of course, when you look at the offense, I mean, you got to start. I think the top thing you got to look at is the youngsters, kind of like what MLB.com put out there for their one most important thing we learned about every team this spring training. It's the kids. For Brewers fans, maybe around my age, it's maybe a little reminiscent to the early 2000s when the kids, JJ, Ricky, Prince, Bronny coming up, Corey Hart, is this kind of that, a similar group here? Sal, Bryce, Garrett, Joey. Two Joeys, I should say now. Joey Ortiz and Joey Weimer. And then, of course, Jackson. Is that kind of reminiscent to that? It kind of gives me a little bit similarities, parallels to it. But there's no doubt, when we're looking at the offense for this group, I don't think anybody's really kind of questioning their defense. I know Jackson Sherry was struggling there a little bit. But, you know, Bryce Terang, I think we all know from what we saw last year, going to be pretty darn solid. Joey Ortiz is a pretty solid defender. Sal Frelick, those outfielders, ton of speed. So I don't think we're necessarily worried about the defense. But it's going to be their offensive game. Can guys like Sal Frelick and Bryce Terang improve and be more consistent? You know, they got their feet wet last year, got a lot of playing time in the major leagues last year. Are they ready to be full-time major league players? And in order to do that, they've got to be better at the plate at a consistent rate, especially like a Bryce Terang. Can they get on base and utilize their speed? You know, I'm really intrigued or excited to see this year is, are we going to see this team be more aggressive on the base pass? Stealing bases, moving runners over, utilizing that speed. I mean, it sure looks like when we look at this, and I know we've talked about this so often, is like, okay, you got these guys, these young guys, Frelick, Terang, Cheerio, you know, why wouldn't you want to be aggressive with them and maybe try to steal some bases, considering they're a young team and, you know, offensively, do you want to put a little bit more pressure on the opponents? I mean, I think the majority of us are saying, yes, please do so. Will it happen, though? That's the big question. I hope it is. I hope we see this team utilizing that youth and utilizing that speed to put pressure on opposing teams. And that might be the best way for this team to manufacture some runs. You know, I think the perfect scenario is, okay, say it's either Sal or Bryce or Jackson that's hitting, you know, top 1-2. You get on, get a single, you steal seconds. You got a runner already in scoring position with Yelich coming up, and hopefully Yelich maybe puts up similar numbers to last year, 280 hitter. But, I mean, you get a runner with that speed at second base already, and you've got, you know, maybe a William Contreras or a Yelich or a Rhys Hoskins up. I think we're all feeling a little bit better about that scenario than what we were last year. I really hope we get to see that this year. I really do. So those are kind of the things that are what I'm really looking forward to. Just a few things. You know, Pat Murphy, I'm excited to see what different things, if there are different things that he brings to this team in terms of like strategy or philosophy. And that kind of goes into the, will this team maybe be a little bit more aggressive? And last year they were, what was it, 11th? I think we looked up last week in bases. And if you listen to the latest, or I shouldn't say the latest because it's not the latest anymore, but if you listen to the podcast episode on Friday that Brandon and I did, where we had some Brewers predictions, my bold prediction was that this Brewers team finishes top three in stolen bases, top three in the majors. I feel like they have that ability to do that. But a lot of that is going to be on, is that going to be the strategy of Pat Murphy and this Brewers team? So I'm excited to see what he does. I think he brings a new enthusiasm. I think he himself is like pumping some enthusiasm throughout that clubhouse, throughout that locker room. And I hope it converts into a bunch of wins. You know, obviously we're excited about Jackson Chirio. We're excited to see him. I also feel like that was one of the questions that Brandon and I both put out there was most disappointing player. And I had two, but one of them was, I think, for some fans, Jackson Chirio is going to be disappointing in his first year because I think for some fans, they're going to have such super high expectations for this kid that if he goes out there and hits 260, there's going to be some fans that are just going to be disappointed because we've been hearing about this kid for, it seems like, 10 years, and he's only just turned 20. And he's got the big contract already. He hasn't made his major league debut yet. So, naturally, there's already a lot of expectations on him. And for some fans, they've already got that expectation in his head. I mean, you're hearing now, hey, youngest since Robin Yount. So now, inadvertently, that's changing for some people's minds. Like, oh, next Robin Yount. Kind of putting the pressure on there. Not on purpose. It just kind of manufactures into that. So I almost feel like Jackson Chirio, for some, you know, if he hits 260, he might be a disappointing player for some people out there. And some may just not be patient with it. But I'm excited to see him. I'm excited to see this kid in action. Can he be the new face of the franchise? That's what they're hoping he can be. And all the other youngsters. Sal Frelick. Bryce Terang, we know, is a plus defender. Can he improve that offense? And then, you know, the starting rotation. How is that all going to work out? To me, is probably one of the biggest unknowns on this team. Is how is that starting rotation going to play? How are they going to look? I'm nervous about it. But at the same time, there's some curiosity with it, maybe is the best way I can describe it, to see how it all plays out. All right, that is going to do it for us on this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, again brought to you by our good friends from Hy-Vee and Toyson Ford. As always, don't forget, if you got a few seconds, and if you haven't done so already, if you could give us a 5-star rating on like Apple and Spotify and a positive review on Apple so others can find the podcast. If you've already done that, big thanks. Appreciate it. Just be a friend. Tell a friend. Tell others to do so. And share the podcast so we can get the word out there. Till next time, I'm Dan Casper, and I will talk to you on the next episode of the Man Cave Podcast.